Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us on Alien Talk Podcast. This is the show where we discuss all things about aliens and UFOs, and as always, where we push the limits of our understanding. We are your inquisitive, truth-seeking, and fact-chasing hosts, Joe Landry and Nori Ilford, and we welcome you to our discussion today. So we're going to cover something known as the Baltic Sea Anomaly. But as we expanded our research into this, we realized that we can't just limit ourselves only to that. It is part of a larger paradigm of underwater mysteries out there. And we see that there are all kinds of anomalies all over the ocean floors. There is a pyramid structure off the coast of Japan called the Yonaguni Monument. There is Bimini Road near the Bahamas. There's also a strange formation in the Caribbean Sea between Cuba and the Yucatan Peninsula that looks very much like the layout of a city. The Mediterranean Sea and the Caspian Sea have a bunch, and really, you know, the whole ocean is nothing more than one big enormous mystery, and it is a little scary to some people.
Yeah, I can see why some would think the ocean is scary. I mean, it is a massive place. It's thousands of miles of water that is several miles deep, with killer storms like hurricanes and typhoons. And you know, I enjoy being on the ocean when I'm on the shoreline, but being out at in the ocean at night on a cruise, it's pretty scary. I mean, looking into the dark abyss. So, I mean, you have no idea what's underneath that surface either, in Davy Jones' locker, as they call it.
Yeah, it's cold, it's dark, and there's still creatures living in there that we have yet to identify. There's speculation about the Megalodon existing under the ocean, a 60 to 100 foot long prehistoric shark. How much scarier can you get than that? And we know more about the surfaces of the moon and of Mars than we do about the ocean floor. More than 80% of it hasn't even been examined at all. And that's from National Geographic magazine, dated January 21st, 2011. So yeah, the ocean is just a big old abyss of unknown. And that is a little frightening to think about, right? There could be anything in it.
Yeah, plus the giant squids, Joe, the Kraken, creatures like that. abandoned ships, you know, floating adrift out there for years. Yeah, the ocean is freaky, but it leaves us with a lot to explore. And that's just what scientists do. You know, they spend a good bit of time trying to learn more about the ocean and what's at the bottom of it. So that brings us to the Baltic Sea Anomaly, which, like some of the other things you mentioned, Joe, is something that has been detected on the ocean floor, usually through sonar imaging. Or imaging that looks like it shouldn't be there, like it sticks out from other natural rock features or formations. And that is what we have with the Baltic Sea Anomaly. It was found in 2011 by two Swedish marine geologists, Peter Lindberg and Dennis Ashberg. And what it is a near circular object about 100 feet in diameter, and approximately 300 feet down on the seafloor, specifically in the Gulf of Botnia between Finland and Sweden. And they were able to pick up on their computer-enhanced sonar image because it was so large of a circle with straight lines going from one end to the other. So, you know, this stuck out at them, you know, like a sore thumb, and was in contrast with the characteristics of the other rock formations in the area.
Right. And to make it even more unusual, they were also able to see what appeared to be a wide trail behind it that was actually a fairly deep trench. And it had the semblance of a giant skid mark, since it was of the same width of the anomaly. And this led many who have seen the imagery to speculate whatever it is something that is not an ordinary feature down on the ocean floor and on the Gulf of Botnia. But instead, it is something that is not natural, and that it may be some kind of object that actually crashed into the sea and sunk to the bottom, or even crashed there before there was a sea and had created this trail of what is, you know, now the remnants of molten rock left behind it.
Now, if you're a fan of UFO research, which we're sure you are since you're listening to our podcast right now, then you know that this anomaly was thought to be proven to be debunked. Well, I'd say not so fast. So Lindberg and Ashberg were able to retrieve samples from a remote control submersible. And those samples were analyzed in a laboratory in Stockholm. The results showed that it was composed of basalt, which is a volcanic rock. This from an article by Gaia.com staff, which is dated November 10th of 2019, titled "The Baltic Sea Anomaly, a Crashed UFO or Natural Rock Formation." Well, they wrote that it was tested by Volker Bruchert, or Bruchert. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name right, but he's an associate professor of geology at Stockholm University, who said, this is his quote, "I was surprised when I researched the material. I found a great black stone that could be a volcanic rock. My hypothesis is that this object, this structure, was formed during the Ice Age many thousands of years ago."
Well, much of the ocean floor is comprised of igneous rock, which comes from magma deep in the Earth's mantle. But, you know, despite his own analysis, the professor went on to say that it was possible that the samples that they collected may be covering up something that is beneath a layer of limestone and shale, which is maybe something artificial, to give it the shape that it has on the bottom of the ocean floor. And the team believed that could be the case. So in 2012, they all wanted to go back to the site and get better images of it and perhaps get better samples that extended further down into the formation. But that plan was shot down due to lack of funding from OceanX. OceanX is like a conglomerate of different organizations, some of them private companies and some of them educational institutions. Actually, filmmaker James Cameron is or was a part of it. And while they haven't done any further studies of the Baltic Sea anomaly, many are divided as to the nature of it. It does indeed look artificial. It does look like the Millennium Falcon on the bottom of the ocean floor. Could it be an ancient or even not so ancient extraterrestrial craft that crashed into the sea and left an impact gouge on the bottom and its remains are still there? Thus far, that doesn't seem to be the case.
Well, you know, the reason why funding wasn't available, Joel, it was because after the laboratory analysis, most of the experts thought that the UFO hypothesis was debunked and it was not an extraterrestrial craft, and therefore funding would only be a waste of money and resources. But let us analyze what may be what's really going on here. Like, first of all, you have to look at the professor's statement and pick up on cue words. For example, he said, it could be volcanic rock. Could be. Professor Bruchert even said that the samples were collected may be covering up something artificial underneath. Well, with that said, I'm thinking that what if the samples they collected, you know, was volcanic rock that had piled on top of this object as it crashed into the ground? But a molten lava that formed could have been an area of volcanic rock in which this craft crashed, or it formed from the intense heat of the craft when it hit the surface due to the trench of that trail that it left behind. And the reason why Peter Lindberg and Dennis Hochberg, you know, wanted to retrieve bitter core samples from the area was to get an idea of what was deeper than the original ones had shown.
You bring up some good points, Laurie. Yeah, Bruchert doesn't seem completely confident in his own assessment. And there seems to be more material buried deeper, and we don't know what it is. Someone can certainly also claim that this was a circular geological formation that may have slid in a rock slide thousands of years ago, possibly as a result of glacier movement during the Quaternary Ice Age that started 2.5 million years ago and ended about 12,000 years ago. And this is somewhat like the satellite and aerial image of a giant piece of ice in Antarctica. It looks like when you might consider to be a wrecked craft of some sort, having slid down a mountain range, has the same sort of appearance. So to me, it looks more like a large piece of ice sheet that broke off and slid there because it is long and jagged and covered in snow. The one on the Antarctica I'm talking about. And with the temperature changes throughout the last interglacial period, that is what most likely it is, I would say. However, with regard to the Baltic Sea anomaly, the detail in the sonar image is pretty interesting, as it seems unusually shaped for a rock outcrop. Not really any jagged edges at all. It's pretty smooth and almost pretty well shaped, as if it's artificial. So if those images are real and are not fake, then this is one mysterious looking rock formation.
Yeah, indeed it is, because there is nothing else similar in appearance around it or near it or anywhere away from it. It's like it's all by itself. So I have a feeling that a lot of the images are doctored and computer enhanced, of course. But the professor did claim that the volcanic rock was from the Ice Age. He said, my hypothesis is that this object, this structure, was formed during the Ice Age many thousands of years ago. So could it be that the rock was already there, which was what tested back to the Ice Age, but the object itself came much later? And the reason why I asked this is because of the trail slash trench that's behind it. And I think that trail would have been covered over that period of time by now, you know, due to the ocean currents, because, you know, that is just mud and soil. If it was just mud and soil, so could that be a possibility? And the only reason that trench would still be there is if it was created by intense heat and it made this hard molten imprint in the seabed.
So when we look at that part of the world, that being Scandinavia and Central Europe, we need to ask if there is any lore about gods traveling around in sky chariots. If the answer is yes, there is. In the Nordic, Celtic, and Baltic traditions, there is the image tradition of the divine twins, who are really nothing more than personifications of the morning star and the evening star. And they are believed to cross the sky in a golden boat that also travels across the sea. And throughout the Bronze Age, these divine twins were also depicted as pilots or drivers of solar chariots and barges who had come to the rescue of sailors, and in one story are even said to have rescued the sun disk from out of the sea. Now, the worship of Nordic gods originated in that part of the world, and deities such as Odin, Norge, Frigga, and Thor and Loki are part of that tradition. But these gods were reconstructed from an even older Indo-Aryan name, Deus, from the root word du, which means sky, and it alludes to the diurnal sky or the brightness of the day, as the etymology of other Indo-European languages, and it revolves around the idea of day being sky, being God. Deus is therefore identical to what appears in the Vedic myths of a sky god, who would be the Greek and Roman equivalents of Zeus, Jupiter, and Apollo. And there were wars fought in the sky among these gods, ancient battles that are indeed depicted in religious texts everywhere in the world.
Exactly. And a very good listen in Norse mythology there, Joe.
Thank you.
So what we're saying is, out of all these sky battles, the myths of these things, the lore of these things, which we believe could, you know, may not be myths at all, occurring around the world since our civilization's establishment, it is possible for the craft or these chariots of those gods to have crashed. And the answer is yes, of course. If it's technology, it's going to fail at some point, even if it's built by the gods per se. Now, what if a few of those ancient sky battles resulted in the loss of those sky chariots that may have crashed to Earth and were buried beneath the desert sands, now waiting to be discovered, just like how the Sphinx was once covered in sand?
Yes, that's an excellent point. Aside from the battles and the, you know, the casualties of being shot down, I guess, they could crash from mechanical malfunction, just like our aircraft have that tendency to do. But, you know, the point is, when it comes to this Baltic Sea anomaly, most people will never likely have the opportunity to see it up close. And it's likely they will never have the opportunity to go underneath Antarctica. And they certainly will not have an opportunity to set foot on the moon or Mars. Only a very select few people will ever have these experiences. To most everyone else, that being 99.999% of the world, it will remain a mystery. That's to you and I included in that 99.999%. We therefore can only trust in what they tell us, even if it's not the complete and accurate telling of what was observed. And this has always been the case. You know, NASA, the U.S. military, or any government agency or government-funded organization for that matter, can easily control the narrative that gets released to the public. They provide us with nibbles of information here and there, which may have little, maybe no truth to it. And it leaves us with a lack of clarity. And we all know what happens. We've seen it in our own lifetime, just in the last few recent years, we've seen that happen. And I think this is why it is important to have more than one entity involved in the study, investigation, and analysis of these phenomena, like the Baltic Sea anomaly. Information should be free, right? At least when it comes to our planet and to the natural or human history behind it.
You're right. So, you know, we have to ask the question as to why the guys from the Ocean X team would bring up samples of this thing or lava rock to be embarrassed by having it debunked, right? I'm sure they knew the difference between lava rock and metal or iron. They were there. They saw it. So why the desire to get the funding to go back down if it was deemed a natural formation? It's because they know firsthand it's something different, something that our elites may want to keep us in awe of its mystery, because they know that the average person isn't down there or going to be down there anytime soon to prove them wrong. And if the Baltic Sea anomaly is indeed a crashed alien spaceship, do you think they are going to announce exactly that? Well, the answer is a big no. And we have many things documented as being hidden or covered up by institutions such as NASA and the Smithsonian. And now, to your point about other undersea anomalies, did you see the one that is off the coast of Malibu, California?
Yeah, that is another thing that is underwater, and that with the sonar imaging seems to be an outcrop. It's called the Sycamore Knoll, but it's shaped almost perfectly like an oval, sort of like an egg. And it's about 5 miles off the California coast, and it's down pretty deep, about 2,200 feet. It is mentioned as the Malibu anomaly in an editorial from the Malibu Tribune, which is dated September 4th, 2014, with a reference to a UFO researcher, Robert Stanley, who lives in the LA area and has witnessed quite a few sightings of his own, to include USOs, underwater submersible objects, moving about offshore. It also mentions that the anomaly has been known about for quite some time, as it has been presumably studied by Scripps Institute of Oceanography, which is not very far away. It's in La Jolla, near San Diego. And according to a 2009 paper from the Geological Society of America, Sycamore Knoll is a large thrust fault. And that is something which is part of an intricate and very pronounced system of faults that we know are throughout Southern California.
Well, there is something odd about it now that you look at it. So if you go to Google Maps and you put in the search for Malibu, and you'll see where that anomaly is supposed to be. It's right offshore in that blue part that is the ocean. But this image, if you look at it now, was recorded back, I guess, a few years ago, or the ones that, if you go look at it on Google Earth, it shows this thing the way it was. But right now, if you look at it, it shows the year of 2024. So it was updated. Well, that thing that you're talking about, that egg-shaped thing, 2,200 feet down, is actually blurred out now.
So are you able to look at it right now?
Yeah, you can go to that Google Earth, and I mean, you saw it before. It's right off of Point Mogu State Park, and GPS coordinates, if you pin it, it's, let me see, hold on, 34.001857, -119.0388. So you can put that pin on it.
Okay. So, yeah, it looks like that part of the image is eradicated. It's like pixelated.
Yeah, correct. So a search for the Malibu anomaly pulls it up with images that have no blurriness. When you go through Google, like if you go Google images of this thing, you'll see all the pictures of it. But now when you go to Google Maps and look for it, and I've done it before, and it was always there. Now they've updated it, which is through that 2024, And now they have it obscured. So, and also to your point, you said that this thing was down 2,200 feet. And if you look at the Baltic Sea anomaly, that one is only down 300 feet, but we can't see that one. But we used to be able to see this one off the coast of Malibu. So we have to ask, why would they do that?
Well, to our listeners out there, you can do just what we just did and see for yourselves on Google Earth and do the search. Yeah, I do recall seeing this thing before as being unobscured. So it's important that we keep in mind that the imagery from Google Earth, it comes from multiple sources that are compiled together. And what we get is a composite of various forms of imagery that is an end result of something that is, you know, closer to animation than actual photography. So with the pictures that we see in the blue showing the ocean floor structures, what we really have are combinations of sonar from ships and submersibles and synthetic aperture radar from airplanes and satellites. And the processes involved with these pieces of equipment are able to see through the water by way of acoustic and radio wave echoes, and thus be able to create a picture, what's on the bottom, and then the computer enhances it and it sort of fills in the blanks. And Google Earth collects and compiles a lot of this imagery from the U.S. military, NASA, and NOAA, as well as from the U.S. Geological Survey. So where the collected data is not perfect or is disarrayed in some way and incomplete, the computer algorithms will fill it in and with features that may or may not be entirely accurate. However, you know, things are sometimes blurred out intentionally, certainly like Area 51. If you were to do a Google Earth search of Area 51, it certainly is blurred out in a lot of places.
Right. But in this case, it seems to be that it is deliberately pixeled or pixelated so that it can't be deciphered anymore. And maybe they're thinking that some doubters will focus on the updated maps of 2024 and, you know, eventually ignore the old ones, claiming they were doctored or enhanced, you know, get some conspiracy theory going on, you know, much like they're saying about the Baltic Sea anomaly. I tell you, Joe, there is something strange about these underwater anomalies. And there are things they just don't want us to know about or even question. And you can't help but think if the now famous Tic Tac UFO is in some way connected with a secret underwater base. After all, it was witnessed by fighter pilots from the aircraft carrier USS Nimitz that was out off the coast of Southern California. This was back in 2004, I believe it was. So could it be that there are such bases and that it is there that extraterrestrial operations are taking place? Do they have such craft that can travel underwater and then fly out into space? Could something like the Malibu anomaly be one of such things from which USOs leave and arrive and are, you know, witnessed throughout the world's oceans and even witnessed by people off the coast of California seeing strange lights going down into that area and other areas off the coast?
I mean, yeah, that is interesting. I mean, the military pilots who, you know, witnessed a Tic Tac, they weren't far from this area. I mean, they weren't right on it, but I mean, they were in this the Pacific Ocean, several miles off the California coast. So in the ballpark, it's quite a big ocean. So perhaps. And what you're saying is the case, and that would be some very amazing engineering skills to build ships that can travel seamlessly from underwater and then up in the air and then out into space. And of course, back again, with the amount of money needed for the research and development of something like that, you could probably buy an entire industrialized country. And in regard to what you said about the Smithsonian, well, Joseph P. Farrell, in his book, Genes, Giants, Monsters, and Men, talks about something he labeled as archaeological cover-up of anomalous evidence and artifacts, noting that the most important archaeological institute in the United States, which is the Smithsonian Institute, and that is federally subsidized, by the way, has been actively suppressing some of the most interesting and important archaeological discoveries that have been made in the Americas. Farrell then writes that this fact is often overlooked, and it stands to reason, like any other government agency or entity, that the Smithsonian would have its own classified secrets, so to speak. Farrell then asks, Why would such a seamlessly staid and sober discipline and institution be keeping secrets?
And that's a good question. Well, as he says, the answer, according to David Childress, who many of you probably know from seeing him on the Ancient Aliens TV show on History Channel, he says it is rather simple, because he's quoted in that book, the Smithsonian had an agenda to promote a particular historical and anthropological paradigm, and to suppress the evidence of another. What Farrell and Childress and Philip Coppens, the late Philip Coppens, were referring to was the 1908 discovery of a great underground citadel found in the Grand Canyon. It was large enough for giants and was thought to have possibly been hewn by the ancient Egyptians, and the Smithsonian's Department of Anthropology was involved in the excavation. However, in recent times, when scholars have tried to search through the files, they cannot find any information about who discovered it, nor anything about the Egyptians or the giants.
Yeah, this is even though the whole thing was carried back then in newspaper pages of the Arizona Gazette, as well as there being other references to it. So, yeah, it is very odd that the Smithsonian doesn't seem to have any record of its own discovery.
And Farrell's book even alludes to giants in how abnormally large humanoid skulls were found in Alaska that measured from 22 to 24 inches from the base to the crown. And these were found when the Americans were building an airfield on one of the Aleutian islands during World War II. So the point is, the Smithsonian may not be all too reliable or unbiased when it comes to controversial discoveries in which they, you know, played a part. And, you know, when you get down to it, the ocean itself is nothing but mystery. It always has been. And there is no telling what really is down there, of course, but things are always being discovered with newer, you know, telemetry and imaging technology. And the proof of human settlements are located all the time, sometimes from the receding coastlines of rivers and lakes, but also from deep sea exploration. So we know a lot has been going on with the ocean over the millennia, in that it has been constantly in a state of change. And that means it can erase things from the surface and can conceivably, you know, hide them for, I mean, well, I guess for eternity. But stories about something like Atlantis being whipped away by the power of the ocean really do not sound all that far-fetched. And we know from physical evidence that the deep waters, the currents, the waves, and the storms are incalculably powerful, very powerful.
Right. So we know that coastlines all around the world have changed quite a bit over the passage of hundreds and thousands of years, and there's plenty of evidence of that. The remains of cities and villages are regularly found underwater. Like you said, Lori, oceanographers and deep sea divers are constantly coming across new archaeological remains, some of them rather impressive. They are all kinds of ruins found along the coasts of Greece, Turkey, Lebanon, Israel, and Egypt that show that the ancient shorelines were further out than they are today. And these finds attest to how the ocean has altered over the course of, you know, many centuries and thousands of years, and has laid claim to human habitats. You know, take the Yonaguni Monument, the far off the Yuko Islands of Japan. It seems to suggest the possibility of how a civilization like Mu could have succumbed to the perpetually changing ocean. Bimini Road near the Bahamas exhibits the semblance of something man-made and leaves us with wondering whether or not it is a remnant of lost Atlantis that legend holds had sunk to the bottom of the sea. So who knows? Maybe the world's oceans are the key to understanding the link between the possibility of extraterrestrial life and the mysteries of our own ancient past.
And we've brought up a few times before how there are some theories about how either top secret naval activity or alien intelligence is at work in areas like the Bermuda Triangle. Also, the sightings of USOs moving under the water or traversing in and out of the water. And these have been reported for hundreds, if not thousands of years. I mean, even Christopher Columbus saw them in 1492. But there are other phenomena as well. Like take the enigmatic bloop that was detected by numerous ship hydrophones positioned all over the Pacific Ocean. Well, this happened back in 1997, and it has brought about much speculation as to what it was, since it was loud enough to be detected across distances exceeding past 5,000 miles. And all it sounds like is a bubble in the water, but with being picked up almost everywhere in the Pacific. And that's one heck of a bubble. And it makes you wonder, what is it that made it? You know, was it some kind of large beast living in the deep, or was it, you know, something else, something natural?
Right. Both the U.S. Navy and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, have detected it and recorded it and analyzed it. And the most accepted explanation is that it was ice calving in Antarctica, where very large pieces of glaciers, sometimes they are pieces that are as large as the size of Manhattan, they break off into the ocean. And that could be. It would definitely be loud in the water, and sound does travel further in the water than it does in the air.
Yeah, but wouldn't a large piece of a glacier falling into the ocean make more of a splash sound than a bloop sound?
You would think. Maybe if it was detected closer to where it happened, it might sound more like a splash. I mean, seismologists analyze the amplitude and frequency of the waves, and that is their hypothesis. Now, interestingly enough, according to NOAA's Pacific Marine Environmental Laboratory, the source seems to have been far near or somewhat near a place on the globe that's called Point Nemo. Named after Captain Nemo from 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, not the Pixar movie. So this is a spot in the South Pacific. It's at 48.8 degrees south latitude and 123.4 degrees west longitude. That has been deemed to be the remotest point on Earth, with no land in sight for over 1,600 miles. It is outside of the designated shipping routes, so there is very little sea traffic as well as air traffic. And the closest people around will probably be the astronauts on board the International Space Station when it happens to pass by while up in orbit.
So, yeah, if you're out in that part of the ocean, you're not likely going to see anything else. It is definitely not the place you want to find yourself lost at sea, that's for sure. I mean, it could be a long time before you are ever found. More likely if you are ever found. So, If some very highly sophisticated technology, say alien submarine craft like USOs, were coming and going from a secret underwater base, the area around Point Nemo is the place where it would be mostly unlikely to ever be spotted. So, or, you know, such a base could even be in Antarctica, which is also a very remote place and within a straight shot of Point Nemo by 1,600 miles.
So in an article in the magazine New Scientist, dated June 5th, 2002, Christopher Fox, who worked with NOAA, he told journalist David Woolman that the bloop was far more powerful than the sound made by any whale or any known marine animal. And while he said he didn't think it had originated from something that was man-made, like a bomb, he believed that it was from something more efficient at making sounds. And whatever that something is remains to be known.
But there seems to be a lot of evidence that would at least support the notion that secret alien bases could be there or around there, like in Antarctica, either underwater or under the ice sheets, from where extremely sophisticated flying craft take off and land and travel all over the planet from. So, guys, don't give up on the Baltic Sea anomaly just yet. It just may be something of highly advanced technology and even likely extraterrestrial. And it may be that there are others just like it in other parts of the world.
Yeah, I would actually be surprised if there weren't more like it in other parts of the world. So whether the idea that an extraterrestrial presence is manifested through the increased sightings of UAP and USOs, or through learning more about you know, those lost civilizations of Atlantis and Lemuria and Mu into the strangely elaborate technology that those lost civilizations may have possessed long ago. Maybe they are, you know, these mysteries are the remnants and what is left behind from those advanced civilizations that are now eradicated from the ocean.
Right. And so with that, in closing, we want to share a little about our novel, Battle Planet AD, Relic of the Gods.
Yeah, for sure. We want to briefly talk about our novel. So I'm going to go ahead and read the back of the book in the hopes that it piques your interest. So here it goes. This is from the back cover of our novel. The quest for our future lies in our past. 4,000 years ago, extraterrestrial civilizations from distant planets fought for control of the Earth and to rule over it. The legacy of their greatness as well as of their destructive power became preserved not only in mythological traditions, but also within the archaeological record. After millennia of being covered by the desert sands of Egypt, an abandoned wreckage of one of their spaceships is discovered in 1947 by Cambridge University researcher Dr. Samuel Crowley. He realizes this startling find will change the course of human history. It is around the same time that another astounding event occurs on the other side of the world. In New Mexico, U.S. Army Major Stephen Marshall is sent to investigate the crash of an unidentified object that had recently occurred several miles from the airbase, in which two extraterrestrial bodies had been recovered. He is soon to find out that this incident is part of a much larger scenario that is unfolding. The U.S. and British governments select them to work together for the purpose of national security interests. Stephen and Samuel embark on a secret mission to study the spaceship and to prevent it from falling into the wrong hands. They, along with a team of intelligence agents, come against powers that are trying to seize control of the excavation site. A shadowy and preternatural cabal believes that the spaceship has come directly from God, and they will stop at nothing to keep it hidden. Their journey becomes perilous as Samuel and Stephen come to understand that the profound significance of the ancient spaceship, realizing that the survival of humankind is at stake. They soon find amidst betrayal and treachery that the ancient spaceship is more than just an artifact. It is the evidence and the relic of the gods. So that
yes.
Is
so, the cover. Yep. So in a nutshell, Battle Planet AD, Relic of the Gods is a science fiction novel that is partly set in the ancient past in which there is a space battle between the Anunnaki and the aliens of the Zeta Reticuli, who are vying for control of the Earth. From there, it transitions to the year 1947, where the main characters of the story are introduced, which Joseph spoke of. From there, it takes off through an adventurous quest to find the truth behind a groundbreaking discovery that was made. It's a saga full of action, mystery, betrayal, and an ever-twisting plot that ties in everything from the Roswell crash to the clandestine existence of a shadowy cabal to reveal humanity's ancient alien connection. So we think you will find the book to be very entertaining, thrilling, and you know, maybe even inspiring. And so it can be found online through Barnes & Noble and Amazon, and it is available in paperback, hardcover, and Kindle ebook formats.
Yeah, and then for our next episode, we'll discuss the book a little more in depth and kind of go into the background of it, you know, our thought processes that helped bring out the story and create the characters. You know, we'll reveal what it was that inspired us to write it.
Yeah, it'll be an episode that is, you know, about us, your co-host. It'll be like a testimonial as to why we want to push the limits of our understanding and explore all things about the unexplained and the mysterious, and we hope you enjoy it.
Yes, we certainly do. And until then, we hope that you, like us, will continue to stay curious. Goodbye, everyone, and thank you for listening.